First, we have Jim Davis. Jim joined ACA just a few years ago. Jim, if you'd like to start.
Absolutely. Thank you, Amy. ACA is a great system. Okay, any questions? No, I'm just kidding. What I would want to share with you is how I found out about ACA, why I joined it, and why I think it's a great value. I'm a newer member. I came out of training exactly 2 years ago, January of 2008. And I'd have to say that I was very impressed with how in-depth the training was and how prepared I was to be a financial planner, and not just prepared on how to advise clients, but how to set up an office and how to run an office. Now, obviously, I don't have anything to compare that to because I have not been involved in other systems, but what I can tell you is that we have a few folks that have come over from the Garrett system, and to a person, they've all mentioned how more in-depth and how much more robust the ACA training was. And to a person, they've said that. And what I like to tell people is that I'm not the smartest person, but I'm smart enough to know what I don't know. So as a career changer, I could not imagine starting from the ground up without a system like ACA. It gives you the structure to build and sustain a successful practice. How I found out about ACA is that my wife and I became clients of a ACA advisor back in 2002, I believe. And I just I appreciated the how he advised us. It just made perfect sense to us. I had always been interested in personal finance, and we had been working with this gentleman for a few years, and I was in a totally different career, and I was just kind of fed up with it. I needed to do something else, and I was meeting with him one day, and he asked me how work was going, and I said, it's just awful. I'm going to do something else. And he said, okay, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I want to do what you do. So we kind of put aside the agenda we had for that day, and he sat down with me, and we put a game plan together to where I could become an ACA advisor. I went back to Ohio State to take all the CFP classes and all that kind of fun stuff. So that took a couple of years. So I passed the CFP exam March of 2007. So by summer of 2007, I'm kind of get the itch to get the practice going and getting involved and started corresponding with Amy about what do I need to do and all this kind of stuff, and found out the fee for this thing, and kind of got a bit of sticker shock. And I said, this is not inexpensive. So I was meeting with my planner one day for lunch, and I was peppering him with a bunch of questions about the ACA system, and I brought up the fee. And he said, you know, what you have to understand, I'll never forget this, and I repeat this all the time. What he said to me is, what you have to understand is that the ACA system, it's like buying a business in a box. And what he meant by that is they will tell you how to set up your office. They will tell you how to run a practice, how to advise clients, how to attract clients, and how to build and sustain a successful practice. And that really made an impression on me. It just made perfect sense. And he had given me a year or two before a copy of Burt's book, Burt Whitehead, the gentleman who started the Cambridge model, the ACA model. And it kind of got into the nuts and bolts of the system, and it just made perfect sense to me. So that's kind of how I found out about Cambridge and why I changed, why I was a career changer, and why I chose ACA. And what I would like to do, my next point, is maybe kind of, I assume all the folks on the call are sold on the whole fee-only concept. There's no question it's the here and now and the future financial planning. And I'd kind of like to take that maybe just one step further and compare and contrast to this to advisors who just do assets under management, or they do not practice comprehensive or holistic planning like an ACA advisor does. We're members of NAPFA, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, for fee-only advisors, and there's a lot of wonderful folks in this organization, but a lot of these folks just do the AUM, where they just manage the money, and not that that's bad, but what I can tell you is, being a holistic or a comprehensive advisor, we add so much more value to a client than just managing money. And people get this, they understand it, and they really appreciate that. We've taken on several clients over the last year, year and a half, who have been with just an AUM type of relationship, and they totally get the comprehensive approach that we offer. And they would say stuff, wow, our previous planner, they never did any tax planning. They never gave us advice on when we should take Social Security or never helped us with the cash flow and things like that. So people love it. They understand it. They get it. And most importantly, they see the value in it, which is why we can charge them a nice fee, a nice handsome fee. Well, we're getting compensated, but they're getting more value in return. What I'd also like to focus on is the community aspect of ACA, where you are not out there on your own. It's not something where you sign up and they send you a manual and they say, okay, you know, good luck with this thing. Call us if you need us. There's a lot of support. You're going to get to know a lot of the other planners across the country, and folks will bend over backwards to help you out. There's no question about that. What really struck me, my first Cambridge or first ACA update conference in Nashville a couple of years ago, they had a little get-together for first-time attendees, and there was a gentleman there who has been in the Alliance for a number of years, who has a very big practice, and what he said was, you know, part of the fee that you're paying is the access that you have to the 150 other planners in this community. You can call them anytime about anything. And what he mentioned was that when he first started out, he had probably four or five of his ACA buddies on speed dial, and he was talking to them often about, you know, practice issues and how to advise clients, but that's part of what you're paying for is access to this community. And what's nice is folks come from a diverse background, folks who are CPAs or attorneys that have a estate planning background. There's folks that have come from the insurance world, folks that are very good with marketing and promotion. And you'll get to know these folks, and you'll get to know, okay, when this issue arises, if someone brought in some crazy variable universal life policy that I'm not sure what the hell I'm looking at, I know I can call John Shear up in Wisconsin. He was in the insurance business at one time, and he'd be more than happy to talk to me about it. You'll get to know these folks, and they'll bend over backwards to help you out. There's no question about it. And what I would have to say is that this ACA model, it lends itself to build a sustained practice. It gives you the structure and the background to create a self-sustaining income stream. With the way we charge our clients, with the retainers, and folks renew your services year in and year out. I've heard some averages where, you know, 95% of clients renew every year with a Cambridge advisor. So once you get them, you'll have them as a client this year, next year, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years down the road for the most part. So, you know, I'm not saying that if you sign up with ACA, all of a sudden your phone's going to ring and you're going to be taking on clients. You know, your job is going to go out to find a dozen to 15 clients, and then you'll start getting referrals off that to really build your practice. But what I'm saying is once you get that practice going and get these clients under your belt, you're going to be working with them, like I said, this year, next year, and years down the road. So what I would say is that this is a proven model to put a practice together, how to advise clients, how to attract clients, and where you're learning from others, where you're not reinventing the wheel. And this model has been refined over the years from the input of many of the best planners in the business, hands down. There's no question about that. So I think, quite frankly, I think it's a great time to start a practice. Our client acquisition has really increased over the last year, year and a half, due to the economic times, quite frankly. I think there have been a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there that have opened their 401k and investment statements over the last year, year and a half, and figure, okay, it's time for us where we finally need to get help. So we've definitely been taking on clients. And what I would have to say is that the ACA system, it's everything that was advertised to me. One of the tenets of being an advisor with ACA is to provide more value than what you charge your clients, and I feel the same relationship with the ACA system where I get more value than what I pay, and that's the bottom line. So what I would say also, that's basically all I have to say, but if you have any follow-up questions, feel free to email me at jim@partnershipfinancial.com, and we can set up a time to talk one-on-one. I'd be more than happy. Amy?
Thank you, Jim. That was great information. Next, we have Doug DeGaine. Doug is a founding member of ACA. He was one of the part of the first group that Burt Whitehead trained to learn how to do the Cambridge system. Doug?
Yes, thank you, Amy.
Your wisdom?
I'm online, and I'll take over if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Thank you. As a founding member, just as a date reference, so you know just how old Doug is, the beta class, the original handful of people that decided to build the practice dates back to 1995. I'm hoping to add to what Jim Davis has said to us rather than repeat, and I made a couple of notes. First, I want to suggest that the listeners consider using visual aids. It's my method of learning, you know, kinesthetic, auditory, and visual. I'm a visual guy. I do speak a lot in terms of analogy, and I would suggest that each of us begin to draft on a piece of paper in front of us a very simple image, and that would be the bullseye. And let me suggest that we start in the middle with a dot that says ACA. And then a second ring of the bullseye that I would like you to label ACA. A third ring of your bullseye would be NAPFA, that's NAPFA. A fourth ring labeled with the letters FPA, and finally, a fifth ring. If you haven't made your bullseye too big, you've got room for a fifth ring, and that outermost ring we're going to label the ocean. And I want to use that visual to describe, I hope, in a way that you can relate to, that many of the listeners are perhaps sitting in the sea, the ocean, looking in at the innermost core of financial planning. When you're out in the sea, in the vast ocean, then you, and I certainly was day one when I decided that this was going to be the career for me. I found myself effectively swimming in a very large ocean. The very nature of deciding to involve yourself in comprehensive financial planning is a vast undertaking, thus the analogy of the ocean. We are suggesting that somehow we're going to become reliable guides for our clients in areas that include everything personal, everything financial. And so the labels we're all familiar with through CFP training, for example, and just the nature of the industry, is we're supposed to be holistic and be there for people to talk about what are the topics. Taxes. Some of us are comfortable with that, some are not. Tax planning. Actually, we refer to that as the mother load, because that is where we identify strategies. Third, investments. Fourth, estate planning. Fifth, insurance. Sixth, cash flow management. And I'll stop there. The gist of it is, it's a very large ocean with a lot of topics, and you're actually out there in the ocean, essentially at this moment, perhaps floating by yourself, clinging dearly to hopefully a life ring of some type. Be it small or be it big, it depends on your confidence, if you will. When I was in that ocean and realizing that it would be much more comforting to have a soulmate, I first identified the inner ring from it called FPA, that's the Financial Planning Association. Now, in the ocean, that's all of us as financial advisors. When we come to the FPA, we're somewhat of a subset. And I'm not sure, I'm just going to guess, that the number of people that are FPA members is somewhere in the large comma arena. I think 65,000 or 85,000 people have said, I don't want to swim alone, I want to swim in a crowd. Well, that's a pretty big crowd. It didn't take long for me to assess when I joined that organization that the composite of people as members ran the gambit. So it really wasn't that much of a defining moment. Then I discovered yet a closer ring to what I was searching for, and that was called NAPFA, N-A-P-F-A, National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. What was an inner core about that and made them somewhat more special is at least they proposed that their only method of compensation would be fees directly paid by their clients, as opposed to the rest of the industry, which is generally transaction-based, commission-based, etc. So I thought I found an even closer inner circle with NAPFA and realized, I will say, that they were more birds of a feather of my own mindset as to what I wanted to be one day when I grew up. Then, after several years of working within NAPFA, I realized that they were not that intimate to my needs, as Jim was beginning to explain. How do you set up your practice? How do you market? How do you deliver the goods? How do you retain a client? Where do I put my computer? What should my files look like? There was no one there really able to step in, and I'm not going to say they're not conducive to helping each other, but it was just a vast arena still. So the it just wasn't appropriate for me to grab onto one of those people and expect them to hold my hand. Well, then, imagine now that we're all out in this ocean trying to figure these things out. Many of us will spend years trying to create a business because of all the complexities. And imagine that it's nighttime, it's foggy, you're in this ocean alone, it might begin to I might be making a picture that's similar to the way you feel today. And then imagine a bump in the middle of the night. And the bump in the middle of the night is the ACA ship of goodwill. It's your rescue ship that you've somehow bumped into, and a rope comes down or a net comes down and allows you to climb on board. And finally, you realize you're in a much closer circle. The ACA circle is now, I'm going to give it a number, I think Amy could correct me, about 150 or 160 advisors who all found themselves going through these processes and all ended up on that very large cruise ship called the ACA cruise ship. Let me back up just a minute and talk about NAPFA in terms of quantity. I don't know what the member count is, but I was guessing that FPA is 65,000 people. I'm going to guess that NAPFA is about 1,200 people, so a much closer small circle of fee-only advisors, and ACA is maybe 150 or 160. So what we've done is drilled down through the bullseye to get you to a much tighter group. And the number one spot on the bullseye, the dot in the middle, that's you. You have a choice to be there right in the center of the very best tight community with the greatest culture in the industry. Or you can stay out there in the grand ocean, swimming around trying to find your way through all the decisions, which include, if you do taxes, which software should I use? If you do a financial plan, whose software should I use? If you do get involved in estate planning, which attorney am I going to talk to, and what methodologies will I recommend? Well, all of those mysteries are in the ocean, but the ACA cruise ship has already been there many times over and have developed some very, very fundamental sound ideas, philosophies, and a wonderful culture. And you're being invited to consider starting your practice efficiently. Don't ask all the questions that are in the sea. Just get on board and see what a very happy crowd have, together developed. Now, so as not to, the only fear I have in the two discussions that Jim and Doug have just offered here, or not discussions, but our speeches, is that we begin to sound like we're proselytizing and, trying to get you to join some sort of a religion. And we'll, of course, want to quickly defend against that, because each and every one of you are very competent, very capable, probably very entrepreneurial, and the last thing in the world you want to do is follow the lead dog. Well, that would not be the case with Cambridge. It is simply a set of tools from which you can pick and reject, but you will soon eventually discover that every single one of those tools are a godsend or a solution to developing your own practice independently. And then I'll remind you of what Jim said. Should you find yourself in an area where you're not as comfortable, topic area, the community, the culture that exists in Cambridge is your answer. This time you can feel free to dial a phone and call one of your comrades, because they are very much a part of your success. They really are encouraging and helpful, as opposed to, I remember when, Doug DeGaine remembers when, he was out there in the sea, and then looking at FPA, and then eventually coming into NAPFA, how, despite my effort to find a close friend, they were still that distant, that I never felt comfortable or welcomed. They didn't teach me a thing. So ACA did. And I think I want to stop right there, with the exception of, let me define culture. It's, who we are, Cambridge Advisors, ACA. What we value, how we interact with each other, and how we interact with our clients. And I did, I think, make a point of how we interact with the financial planning profession at large. We do highly respect ACA, of course, those of us that are in. The next level of loyalty is to NAPFA. We do at least fly in the same circles in terms of being fee-only. And after that, the industry quickly loses weight, as far as I'm concerned, which is not to say I don't, touch base with larger communities for educational reasons and a more rounded view. And I'll stop at that and let Amy take the lead again.
Thank you, Doug. That was great. All right, well, at this point, I'd like to open it up to Q&A. And please, I encourage you to ask any questions you have at all. Because I guarantee you, if you have a question, you're not the only one thinking that. So is there anyone that would like to start?
Sure. This is Anthony. I've got a few questions. I guess, first of all, kind of just some numerical questions. I'm hearing that ACA has about 150 members. I'm curious how many new people joined, say, in 08 and 09. I mean, is this a membership? Is this an organization that's growing quickly or not quickly? What is it? What does that look like?
Anthony, actually, I can get those numbers for you, right, not off the top of my head, but I can look them up, and I can email it to you.
That'd be great. And the follow-on question is, how many of those, say, renewed in 09? Is this something that people stay in for life, kind of like Doug is for 15 years, or is this people join for a year or two and then drop out?
No, it's actually very rare that we have someone join for a year or two and drop out. Most people, they will tell you that, and Doug and Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, you join for the tools and the systems, but then they stay for the community.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm a kind of math analytical person. I mean, is there a number, like a 90% renew every year kind of thing, or?
Yeah, probably right about that.
Okay. Well, I think it'd be higher than that, Amy.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. I haven't run the numbers. I can tell you, though, that I do the exit interviews, and when people leave, there are two main reasons why people leave ACA. One being that, you know, they were a new person who didn't make it, and chances are it's probably because they couldn't get the clients in the door because
right.
they were too busy looking for them under their desk.
Gotcha.
And the other is that they have just, they don't stick with the ACA model, and they go in a different direction. They usually tend to be people who have joined ACA, and they love investments, and they don't want to stop making that their main focus, and they just can't let go, and their practice tends to grow more in that direction. And actually, it's kind of funny. Of the several that I've spoken to who they wish they were still members of ACA. They didn't want to drop, but they wanted to stay a member of ACA for the community, even though they weren't going to practice the only way.
Okay, sounds good. The other question on ACA generally is, what is the entity of ACA? What actually is it legally, and how is it owned?
From what I understand, it's a nonprofit, member-owned organization.
Yes.
So it's not like Mr. DeGain and I are on the line trying to convince prospects to commit to this so we can, you know, line our coffers with more money. It's a pretty tightly run organization, and it's a nonprofit.
So if I join ACA, I become an owner?
Correct. It's owned and run by its members. Burt Whitehead founded it, and he's still very active and always will be active in ACA. But we have a board of directors. We do require that new members participate in some way. We have a million different committees. So people, you know, you look over the different committees, and you pick the committee that you want to join, and that's the way you give back.
That sounds good. And people like Doug and Jim talking about the community of other advisors. That sounds wonderful. Is there an ACA kind of office? Is there a core staff that can be reached for, you know, more the logistical kind of things?
Yes, there is a core staff. I'm one of them. There is a toll-free 1-800 number with different extensions to reach all of us, but we are virtual. We are all around the country.
But the people who kind of run the business, the ACA business overall, as opposed to the individual advisors?
Right, the what we call the admin staff. I'm on Cape Cod. Kathy Stegmeyer, the executive director, she's in Michigan. Her assistant, Kim, is out in California. Arlene, who is our new member concierge, Arlene is in Colorado. Then we have our marketing director, Valerie. She's in Florida. Who am I forgetting?
We also have an instructional leader, and that would be Joy.
Joy Euler, she's also in Michigan.
All right.
So let me elaborate, if I may. This is Doug speaking, that there indeed is a salaried administrative staff that runs the day-to-day operations of a nonprofit organization owned by all of the ACA individual members. So it is true that should you elect to become an ACA member, it is your organization, and suddenly you have a staff of at least a half a dozen committed administrative people who assist with the logistical areas, and equally, if not perhaps more commonly important, is the fellow ACA members who you find yourself gravitating to, you know, hooking arms with. Typically, of course, that's a process of early advisors coming into the organization for training are not coming in alone. They're usually coming in and gathered with others at their same position in the process. So you go through a training process together with sometimes as little as 4 or 5 advisors, and other times with as many as 15 advisors. And you'll go through this entire training process together, which includes being on the telephone for conferences like this, as well as internet-based, you know, web-based conferences where you're seeing tools being demonstrated, so you get a better visual insight of what it is you're involved in. Then there are actual classroom settings that you'll attend. There's, in addition to that, there's going to be desk reference manuals. So you'll have all of the various methods that any of us learn through and with. You know, virtual sessions, real live physical sessions, reference materials, but least we not forget, while there are many administrative people in the background to help with details, I believe you'll find yourself speaking more with fellow advisors. You know, we greet each other, we have each other at offices, we show each other, we talk, we mentor, and so it really is a sharing community. I'll stop.
And piggyback on Doug's remark, my training class, there were 6 of us in there. Like I said, I came out 2 years ago, and we stay in touch. We do a monthly conference call. Just check in, see how folks are doing, what issues have come up, share success stories, and all kinds of fun stuff. So it's really good. I enjoy that.
That sounds great. Thank you. I have one more question, then I'll shut up and let some other people ask a question. But Jim, for you, you've just been in this business now. We completed your training with ACA 2 years ago. This may be too personal, but how many clients have you attained in that period?
Well, the issue I ran into is I came out of training and setting up my office and raring to go, and I ended up partnering up with another ACA advisor here in town that had an established practice. So as a matter of fact, her practice was closed. She had all the clients that she could handle. And then when I came on board as a partner, we kind of opened it back up with the thought of, hey, let's take on a handful of clients, you know, 4 or 5 clients a year for the next 4 years or so, and we'll have plenty of clients coming in. You know, what I can tell you, and I mentioned it in my little beginning spiel, that joining ACA, you know, your phone's not going to ring off the hook with clients seeking your services. You know, that's your job the first year, a couple years, is figuring out the ability to get yourself hired. And you'll figure that out, and they'll teach you how to attract clients. And it's going to be different for different folks. Maybe it's you know, speaking, maybe it's writing, maybe it's affiliating yourself with allied professionals like estate planning attorneys, CPAs, that kind of thing. There's, you know, and they'll teach you how to attract clients, but that's going to be the main focus your first year, a couple years, is trying to get that 12 to 15 clients on board to get that core clientele build up, and then the referral machine will start to kick in.
If I may, this is Doug again, jumping in to respond to Anthony. These are great questions. Well, I want to give you some more specifics. When I was out in the ocean trying to develop my own business, it was a painfully slow process. And frankly, as just a quick back, you know, a visual, what I was successful at is attracting people to do their income taxes, but not developing them into full retainer or holistic financial planning clients. So when I found myself in the company of people that would share success and how to really develop the business, I quickly learned to communicate what it was I really represented, my, you know, the depth of my bench, and was able to begin marketing very, very rapidly once Cambridge taught me what it is I need to communicate to prospects. So I may have started in that first year with 6 clients, paying perhaps only $5,000 to $10,000 for a financial retainer. So, you know, 6 times 5, $30,000, or 6 times 10, $60,000. Now, I'm also going to give that as a backdrop. I'm not sure of our fee for joining Cambridge and obtaining all this wonderful education. I think it's in the neighborhood. I think it's in the neighborhood of $10,000, which is the sticker shock that Jim referred to, perhaps. On the other hand, you have to realize that all it takes is two clients to pay your fee. And now you have a business. And also, there was this question about how many advisors join, at what pace, and how long, and how much renewal base there is. I believe if you look at the 15 years that we've existed, and you have 150 advisors as a headcount, quick math would tell you that, roughly speaking, we gain about 10 advisors a year, hence the 150 we have today. And the renewal process, I believe, is much higher than 90%. It's not an area of concern, in other words, for us at all. And it's very analogous to what Jim was saying your experience will be with clients. We're careful, in other words, to make sure we have an appropriate match, and hence the relationships are lasting. That would be true with our advisor community. It would also be true with your client community, because you'll find that this kind of service is rare, unique, valuable, and special, and we're not for everyone. But those that sign up as your client tend to be with you for a long period of time. In my case, 15 years, I have the same group of clients. I may have lost 5 clients in 15 years. So they're very loyal, because nobody else offers this degree of personal attention that we offer. I lost my train of thought. I'll shut up.
Thanks, Doug. Any other questions?
Well, yes, I have a quick one.
Sure.
This is Lance. First of all, I think that ocean analogy is just, hit me up really, really hard, because that's exactly where I feel I am. And this opportunity to have some guidance from very experienced and learned colleagues, I think, is very, very, very attractive. And I just have a question on the vision of ACA. It's 150. I think that's a great size, but is the ambition of ACA to grow to any great numbers?
Well, there's the ambition to grow, but there's the ambition to not lose quality. You know, we don't want to get people in just to get people in. And that's been kind of we had a focus groups in our last update conference last October. And, there's a lot of folks that say, hey, we need to really grow this thing and get up to a few hundred members. And other folks say, well, yeah, that'd be great, but if we're going to lose quality, that's not a good thing. So I think the idea is to grow but not lose the quality of the membership. And Amy or Doug, I'm sure you could comment further on that.
Well, I'll just make a joke. This is Doug. We haven't had that problem, first of all, Lance. At the rate that I described, roughly 10 a year, that, 15 years to get to the size we are, we certainly can be more. We can be, headcount. We could double, we could triple, we could quadruple. It's not really been the reality of the growth of our organization. But again, I think it's because we're unique, and you're going to select to be a member, not be marketed into membership. FPA, 65,000 members plus, I don't really know what you get from becoming a member of FPA. Maybe a discount on their conference.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to go over a contrast in my mind. I know you hesitate to talk about other groups, but I know the Garrett group is very out front and going to all kinds of seminars and trying to recruit. And I really feel comfortable with an organization who's just able to be static. I mean, would like to grow, but doesn't have to grow to continue. And that's what I see here. And it's a lot of good things, a lot of attractive things for me. Being out here, as far as the ocean analogy is so appropriate for me, I'm in, middle of the Pacific. I do have a lot of contacts, but you know, to have an organization to fall back on, a group of colleagues that I can put in my two cents as well, you know, that's something very attractive to me. But a quick question I have is, at what point, you know, when you commit to join, at what point are you able to get a little bit more of a flavor of what you have access to, the tools and everything else? How does that logistically come into play? You know, if I submit my application on Monday and I do get accepted eventually, at what point do I have access to what ACA has to offer?
Amy?
Well, you have access to everything, actually, right from the word go. One of the other admin staff contacts you to walk you through where everything is. You get sent your home study material right away so that you can get going on that. And you know, where the support staff is there to help get you going and get you up to speed as quick as possible.
And that's a great point, Amy. When I signed up, it was the summer of 07, so I went through the virtual training classroom fall of 07, and then the week intensive program in Denver in January of 08, and I had a coach with me right when I signed up, and she got me to get on the ball, where to get things done so that when I came out of the class in January, I was ready to hit the ground running. Just all the ADV stuff, all the trying to get an office set up, you know, just all the details, trying to get as much of that stuff done. And she outlined it very well for me. You know, here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to be working on. So when I came out of the training, I was ready to go. And I think that's a huge plus.
Let me elaborate on what Jim is saying there. Back to the analogy, and I referred to ACA as some kind of cruise ship you bump into in the middle of the night. I believe it was Lance that just asked about, you know, when will I be set free to sail the seas alone again, which was my original ambition. And please let me emphasize, you are not joining a cruise ship that you are only allowed to get off of when we get to port. You're coming on the cruise ship analogy for the community, the learning, the tools, the, you know, the tricks of the trade. Really what's being taught there is sailing school. I think all of us, most of us, are independent in that way. I certainly didn't want to stay on that ship for long. I wanted to get back into my little boat in the sea, only now instead of it being a life ring, it literally was a one-man sailboat. In my case, it still is a one-man sailboat. I think I have two or three masts on my sailboat now. You know, I'm pretty talented as a sailor at this point in the process, but I can remember, you know, taking off from the training process and being on the ground running, as you say, or in my sailboat sailing, a one-man sailboat. So I knew how to handle the mast and the sails and the anchors and the lines and all the things that Cambridge really just gifted me in terms of, you know, high-quality training. So I'm back out in the sea, but this time I'm comfortable in the sea. And anytime I want to come back into port, it's there.
I love the way Doug describes things. That's great. And that brought up another point that kind of popped up in my head about Doug being a one-man shop. This model will lend itself where, hey, you just want to be a one-man shop and do your own thing? That's great. If you want to have a big office and have partners and staff and have this huge practice at the other end of the spectrum, you can do that too. So that there's definite flexibility on how, well, on what size of practice that you want to have.
So let me give specific numbers, Jim. For Doug, I have 65 clients, and my revenue is in the neighborhood of $150,000 a year. Some will scoff at that as a low number. Some will find that appealing. But please understand the context. I work in a very comfortable home office in a beautiful neighborhood in the Detroit metro suburban area. I love my life. It is a very small little operation. I like being the chief cook bottle washer. The truth is 65 clients is too many, and the truth is $150,000 revenue is too little. But, you know, you have to live there for a while before you're allowed to really critique that. other advisors in our organization would describe themselves numerically as having fewer clients, let's say 30 clients, and I'm being realistic, as a single sole proprietor, you know, 30 to 50 clients is a boatload of people to serve to the degree we do. And you would want your revenues ideally to be, here's what my ideal practice would be, 30 clients and $250,000. Fact is, it's 60 clients, you know, literally twice that many clients and half that revenue. That's the reality. But Cambridge is able to teach us these days, you know, how to get whatever it is you want. So on the big side that Jim mentioned, there are certainly advisors who are pulling in literally millions on their revenue side. Millions. This is a fact, not fiction. But you know that they're not operating that boat by themselves. They've got, you know, whatever you call it, all hands on deck. So they're going to have administrative people and paraplanners and you know, at least it's a couple or three financial advisors. So the possibilities are endless. That was what Jim was saying. Specifically for me, I'm really a pretty happy guy. At 65 clients and 150 grand, I raise a family of three kids, put them all through college, most of them private colleges. You know, it's just, it's not about revenue. It's about efficiency. My overhead is about 20 grand a year. So all of that is there for me. So there's some personal data.
So, Doug, when you said 30 clients and 250K is ideal, Cambridge teaches you to get to that?
Why am I not there now is a better question, right? I mean, the systems are there. So I will self-admit that while having fewer clients and more revenue is everybody's ambition, including mine, the real question is, what's keeping me from getting there? And the answer is not Cambridge. They're not an obstacle. They're a solution. You want the raw truth of why I don't have fewer clients paying more dollars? Look deep within Doug DeGaine. And I think that's a realistic comment to make. You know, I'm my own obstacle to the success of my business. I should be charging more and doing less. But what I'm trying to say here is, you know, do as Doug says, not do as Doug does. But at the same time, I'm also being very frank with you and giving you a reality check. I'm probably not the most efficient deliverer of comprehensive financial advice to clients. Or I would either find it, you know, easier to handle the 65 that I have or, you know, generate more revenue. I just want to be realistic and say that you're part of the success formula. But Cambridge certainly has not let me down in terms of giving me all the tools I need to be anything I want to be.
And when you said 30 to 250, is that with a single planner or is that with staff?
No, I think a single planner, I think we'll all recognize that a single planner sort of caps off at about 50 clients. That's the point at which you find yourself too busy to take on any more clients. So you end up with what we call the closed practice. And an ideal practice would, in other words, be less people. So I just threw out a number like 30 clients. Wouldn't that be lovely? They have only 30 clients, but imagine that they're all paying you somewhere in the neighborhood of $8,000 a year. Well, $8,000 times 30 is $240,000, roughly a quarter million. That would be an ideal practice. That's a goal of mine. It is. But presently, my success was not in finding clients. Boy, did they ever come once I learned what to say. I was very successful at signing up clients. None of them went away. All 65 of them are hanging around on my front porch right now waiting to get in here. I just never really charged them as much as I should have, and that was an obstacle of my own. Cambridge said I should charge more. I didn't feel worthy, and that was a huge mistake on my part, not on Cambridge's part.
Appreciate your feedback, Doug, and your honesty.
Yeah, and that point is hammered in from the beginning, that you need to charge what you're worth, because we do provide a great value. Easier said than done.
Well, for some, let me add, it's been very easy to take what Cambridge offers as advice and counsel and literally grind it out at the other end and be tremendously successful. We have some new advisors, for example, who hold the record in having come out of the training program and off and running they are, running their shop, whether it's in their home or in a commercial office, and signing up, you know, 24 clients in the first year. And literally having a full base practice with over $100,000 of revenue, bam. So, you know, there are people that are more skilled than I, and I might be talking to them right now. So don't forget, you're part of your own success. But why spend a lot of time and energy treading water in the big C when the answers are right before thee?
Doug? What percentage of the advisors work out of their home like you do?
I will only guess, but I believe it could be as great as a third of the advisors are home office. A third are in some kind of a small commercial office setting, and another third would have more elaborate arrangements, and including, by the way, multiple offices around the country. Many of us, you should know, end up with clients all over the place because of the virtual abilities that the internet allows, you know, to conduct appointments on shared computer monitors.
I see. Well, my vision is just dovetails with your situation. That's good to know.
People have often asked, is it a mistake? You know, should I have a home office or not? Is it good? Is it bad? I think it's wonderful. And yet, realistically, let me say this. I think my clients find it a fantastic solution, a preference, a choice. That's why they're here. Now, is it possible that there are clients that think a home office operator is not worthy of their business? I suppose so. But how would I know? They're not my clients.
Right.
But, I will, as a sensitivity, let me say this. When I opened my practice, I had standards, and I was trying to anticipate expectations. I'm very professional, so guess what? I opened up a commercial office for the first 2 years. It wasn't necessary at all. I came home, and I was far more successful at attracting business and getting people to sign on and stay.
Oh, that's excellent to hear.
And Also, one more comment about home office versus commercial. It isn't for everyone. There are pluses and minuses on every approach you take. I love the commute. You know, there are a lot of advantages, obviously, in a home office. It's very comfortable. I wouldn't trade it. I do not work in my pajamas. Don't have that image. I do not have a cat on my lap. Some say that's a good thing. I do not. But at the same time, you have to realize that you need to be disciplined with your office hours. Unlike me, I'll be here 12 hours a day, and even when I do retreat to the family room, which is a separate part of my home, and relax, I will hear the phone ring. And sometimes I'll actually come in and answer it. So there's a reality check about home office and why some people would say that's not for me. Others would prefer the discipline and structure that a commercial office represents. Let me finally say this. Commercial offices aren't free. I chose and justified to use the money I would have spent on renting an office to buy a nicer home. And this home is very conducive to the business I run. It's sort of like I call it affectionately the West Wing is where I do my business, and the rest of my home is still a private home.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm at a stage in life that, distractions that I would try to escape by going to a commercial office are just not there. So I like to
These
think
are
that
the
I can...
discussions the community is able to share with and discuss, and you don't just listen to Doug, take the advice of all others. Amy should probably encourage some feedback or questions, not to interrupt Lance, but, for Mike and DeClaine and Anthony, Jennifer, Eric, Steve, whoever else is out there.
Absolutely. Are there any more questions?
This is Eric Mangold, and I have a few questions, if I may. Thanks all for everybody's input. I've taken like 3 pages of notes, and it's been really great information. I guess we're focusing a little bit on the number of clients and salaries, because obviously that's an important topic for everyone. So to kind of go back to some of that, so if a robust practice is in the neighborhood of 30 to 50 clients, to which point you can't effectively service them and give them the value that they deserve, that seems to me that at some point you're going to be capping out on your salary, capping out on your earnings. Would that be an accurate statement?
I don't think so. Jim might answer better. It's for me, I've recognized the capacity constraint, and if I wanted more revenue, it's not that it isn't there, it's that it would beget a sophistication. I'd have to hire an assistant. I'd have to hire someone that would act as a paraplanner, or I'd need an administrative staff. In my case, that means, I'd have to leave my home because I really, I'm not that thrilled about having to run a business that's supposed to be quiet in my home and then turn it into a more, traditional business operation. So what I'm trying to say is once you fill your practice to capacity, if you desire more revenue, which is more clients, well, expand, meaning a larger office, more people, more hands on deck. That's the nature of business. As you grow and develop, you're going to find yourself needing assistance. And that's, by the way, Jim has said, can be quickly accommodated. You've got a very nice community of potential advisors, some new ones coming in who, as Jim has decided to do, join an existing practice. And I'm sure he can comment, that they've developed since he's joined.
Well, quite frankly, there are a lot of ACA advisors who started when Doug did in the mid to late 90s that have set up a successful practice and they love it, but they might be getting into their 50s, 60s, and they need to start doing some succession planning. And that's kind of where I came in with my partner Joanne. I was just kind of in the right place at the right time type of thing, where I had the opportunity to join her firm. And that's becoming more of a reality. In the fee-only world, it's still kind of in its infancy. There's folks that have been doing it for 15, 20 years, and they need to figure out how to hand this thing off, how to take care of their clients.
I have a girl in my mind as to who's going to take over my practice. Who knows? She might be listening.
I am listening, Doug.
Oh. There we go. See, that was a trick question.
It's recorded too, isn't it, Amy?
Yes, it is.
That basically.
No last names now, just inquiries is all it is.
Thanks for that. Thanks for those answers. In terms of, this is Eric again, in terms of how long when you sign, perhaps Jim, this might, well, actually, a question to anyone, but when you first enter and, day one, you're starting up your new business. How long, on average, does it take someone to turn a profit? Because you have your expenses, whatever they may be, office, technology, admin, etc. But how long, on average, does it take someone to turn a profit? Year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years?
We actually say that you should be turning a profit by the end of your second year.
Second year.
Yep. If not your first, definitely by your second.
Yeah, I don't know that for our community at large, but it took Doug 3 years, so it's a damn good thing I had a bank account in the background.
Okay.
But, I got to tell you, let me preface that. The first 2 years is when I was adrift in the sea all by myself. The third year is when I joined Cambridge, and I finally got things figured out, and I took off. So
okay.
I guess for me, it really took a year after working with Cambridge. Okay, so you got a feel for it. Realistically, you need a bank account to get through this or a sweetheart at home, a spouse that can carry the load.
Understood. Two other questions, and then I'll give somebody else an opportunity. But in terms of the model that Cambridge implies, what prevents some of the big shops, like a Merrill or a JP or UBS, Credit Suisse, whomever, what prevents them from employing this type of fee-only model with a holistic type approach with this full service? Because it seems like a great model. It just didn't seem like why couldn't they just, you know, piggyback off of the model that Bert has created?
Well, Doug DeGaine has three answers. One is that was Bert's original ambition, is to show the industry at large that we had a workable, successful system and let the big whale come and buy into it.
Mm.
Second answer I have for you is it's too much work and not enough money. Now, I say that humorously. Merrill Lynch brokers raking in, you know, $1 million in commission every year don't want to be comprehensive financial advisors who actually work for their clients. It's too much work and it isn't enough money. Now, that shouldn't be the case, but I believe that is the case. So, no, they're not interested. And I think the third one is they're all still welcome to join.
Mm-hmm.
And those that, you know, get smart and decide to go from the dark side, we call it, of the moon, enter the bright side of life where they're putting their clients' interests first in a fiduciary capacity, will look to Cambridge. And I would offer as a challenge, where else can they look? You know, Garrett is out there, but they're not offering holistic planning. They're just doing hourly stuff. And NAPFA is a great organization, but they're all successful and they've all found their way and they're not really reaching out to teach the industry to develop and make us more available. Us meaning comprehensive fee-only advisors. So, hope that helps.
Yeah, Amy, Doug, Jim, this is Anthony. I'm sorry, but I have to jump off the call, but you guys have all been terrific, and I am actually planning on joining Cambridge, especially after this call, within 2 months. So thank you for your time, and
great.
I'll talk to you guys all soon.
Outstanding.
Bye, Anthony.
Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Take care.
One last question from Eric, and then I'll quiet up. But in terms of the support, you said you can rely on the community. Is, you know, I've been in sales for 10 years, and you know, there always has been an opportunity where a client has asked me a question where I may not have the answer immediately readily available. And I said, you know, it's a great question. That's something I don't know the answer to, but I'll find out for you as soon as I can. You know, is that where you say that you can rely on the support of the community? Like if someone comes in with a more complex tax question that I may not be able to answer, I can rely on the community to help me answer that question and provide the service to the client.
And absolutely, and your clients will appreciate that because they'll know that you're just not, you know, off the top of your head, yeah, I think this is right, I think this is what we need to do. They'll see that as, hey, you know, they're going to check this out, they're going to do the research, that's what we're paying them for, and they're going to get the right answers. And then that's when you make contact with folks within the community.
Understood. Okay. Thank you. Last question for me. Thank you.
Sure.
Let Doug.
Go ahead, Doug. Did you want to add to that? Uh-oh. We may have lost Doug. All right. Does anyone have any other questions? No? All right. Well, that's the end of the questions. I'd like to thank everybody for their time today, and especially thank Jim and Doug for their time. Again, I know that Jim is available and Doug is available if you have any follow-up questions.
Absolutely.
And so am I. So if you have any follow-up questions at all, please don't hesitate to call me or email me, or Jim or Doug would be more than happy to answer those questions for you. Thank you, everyone, and have a great weekend.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.